From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 25th day of January, 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear about a really, and I mean a really, really desperately cold week ahead with Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible, and we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Mike Zuzolo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us for the afternoon to talk about what happened in Chicago. Good Friday to you, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you. Not looking forward to that cold, Todd.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a cold that spreads all across the United States, and it's really kind of deep, at least in the Midwest. And I talked to Eric Snodgrass earlier, and it sounds like next week is just going to be brutal. So the livestock folks are going to have to pay a whole lot of attention because, as Eric will tell us later, of course, we're just starting the calving season. So it's going to be tough for them, I think.
Yeah, I think that's where the market maybe is missing some things. We did hear a lot about that this week in the trade on the calving side and the cattle market. Even though we didn't see any cash cattle trade, not even close to the asking prices of 125 out here, the market stayed very, very strong. And I think we even had some premium built into the meal and built into the corn, and more could be built in next week. It was the hogs that just completely ignored what was going on. And I am fearful that if we see, 6 or 7 days of this type of weather in Iowa, Minnesota, our colleagues up at Red River were telling me it was already 15 to 20 below actual temperature up there. But, your main hog belt is going to get affected by this. And if it sticks around longer than the models expect, I wonder if we're not going to have to rebuild some premium back into those hog markets next week.
Yeah, a couple of reasons for that. I suppose there will be some death loss. And more importantly, at least in the hog sector, it just takes a whole lot of energy to keep that many animals warm. And they'll have to up their rations to keep those animals running through that kind of cold weather.
Yeah, and the carcass has been the real, real bearish feature to this market in the last 2 weeks. And, that's where the carcass price, I would think, with logistics being a big issue and traveling and getting hogs to market would be a pretty significant issue. So I'm sure in my mind anyway that the U.S. trade negotiations with China next week probably was the impetus along with the carcass prices. And the cutout prices for the hogs to drop so much this week. And they have gone down and gotten close to filling a gap. And that gap's about a buck lower from where we went down today on the February. So we're cleaning up the charts. And I think this is probably an area where hog purchasing may be a good idea given the African swine fever if those trade negotiations go well.
Why did soybeans rally today?
Well, I think they had several things. I mean, to me, the short-term supply-demand fundamentals had a lot going for them. Meal technicals, meal demand, as we talked about picking up, the South American weather really got entrenched. Keep in mind a week ago, South American Brazil weather specifically was expected to see a pattern change just in the nick of time in southeastern Brazil to bring around the crops. That does not look like it's going to happen. And then all of a sudden you saw the President Trump opening up the government for 3 weeks, and also the Federal Reserve talking about stopping their policy normalization. And both of these things inflationary, both of these things taking the dollar sharply lower, and gold taking up a 7-month high today, I believe it was. So I think those all came onto the risk on mindset in the soy complex, because that's the one that's been beat up the most. And I don't know if we've got a lot of price in place as far as U.S. trade negotiations going well. I don't think so, Todd, because we're right back up against that trading range high of the December high in beans of 928. We haven't taken that out. So I think the trade's trying to keep the premium in on some of these factors I'm talking about. But I don't think that we have, I think we could go higher by quite a bit if we at least initially get a good piece of news from U.S.-China trade negotiations.
Yeah, so we'll have to watch that really closely next week if a good piece of news comes. Does that also mean if there's not really any movement forward, we won't potentially see as much of a drop?
I think we have the Federal Reserve meeting next week as well. I think that when you talk about lower prices with South American weather supporting us, the reason you'd have liquidation would be people in the long atmosphere getting tired and feeling like they're running out of oxygen and not keeping the bull fed, and the charts turn negative. And that's kind of where I'm at. I would say that you still have a 40 to 50 cent downward move to the bottom of the trading range if you get bad news out of these markets in the next couple weeks. And that downside would open up, in my opinion, if you didn't get good news by the end of February. Now, it looks like that as far as the government shutdown goes, the trade is probably expecting some data now in the next 30 days, because my assumption is that even if we go 3 weeks and don't get an agreement, the president's going to hit the nuclear button and keep the government open, and we're done with the shutdown at this point. So that has to be factored in as well.
Yeah, so a couple of things we'll see. The February, I assume we won't see the USDA WASD figures. We'll just wait until the February numbers come out, but maybe not. The crop production report probably will be released. I don't know how long it'll take them to put that together. And the grain stocks and the wheat seedings reports will come out. And I suppose USDA will be working feverishly next week to come up with some dates and times. So we'll be watching for all of that in the next, 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, it's going to be a really, really constricted 2 weeks of February. And then we start our baseline projections for the new year crop insurance as well for the row crops. So I've talked to clients and subscribers for almost 2 months now and said I feel like January and February could be the key months for the trend in the whole marketing year at this stage of the game. And I do think that if we could get a deal that was similar to what China promised on the trade negotiations and erasing our trade deficit by a massive amount of purchases by an X amount of time, I got to think that's going to be inflationary enough that the prices, the overvalue levels that I'm trying to get to, i.e. that 975 area in new crop beans, it's got a shot to get at. I mean, we're within roughly a dime of that right now.
So lots of things to watch. Anything else that you've been keeping an eye on?
Probably the biggest thing is the Federal Reserve and this new news about shutting the normalization and not shrinking their balance sheet. That could have repercussions along with China's central bank policy for several months. And that's outside the realm of what we've been used to talking about. So the dollar could be quite volatile here, even more so than I was expecting.
Okay, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, the disaster aid package passed by the House last week contains a host of new benefits for farmers and ranchers, but one provision is not related to the natural disasters of 2018. The bill, H.R. 268, would eliminate the $900,000 annual adjusted gross income cap that producers must meet to qualify for the Trump administration's trade assistance program. A House aide said the provision was aimed at helping Washington State cherry growers, though it would apply to all producers who seek the trade assistance if passed. It has yet to receive a vote in the Senate. Well, farmers and ranchers and agribusiness would still have to earn at least 75% of their annual adjusted gross income from farming, ranching, or forestry activities to qualify for the trade aid, and total payments would be capped at $125,000 per person or legal entity. Now, on top of adding $3 billion to USDA's disaster relief account, the bill would now allow the money to be used for reimbursing producers for past or future crop insurance premiums. Politico reported this morning that if a deal is struck to end the shutdown, and it appears that is the case, the bill's agricultural provisions could stick. It has bipartisan backing. There's one other agricultural note for the day, this one related to the slowdown in ethanol production we've talked about in other parts of our programming over the last week or two. Livestock feeders are experiencing ripples of the ethanol slowdown, the lack of distillers' grains. Troy Bradenkamp, executive director of Renewable Fuels Nebraska, says in his state there's little reason to worry right now, as none of the ethanol plants are lacking distillers' grains, but that's not the case for everyone.
We've had pretty minimal shutdowns here and a pretty small decrease in production from what I understand. Other states have not been in that same position. I know some other states further east have had some pretty significant plant shutdowns, and clearly their livestock producers or those that were purchasing those distillers grains would be in a much worse position, more acute position in trying to find a replacement for that distillers that they had been utilizing in their feed rations before.
Braden Camp says the slowdown in ethanol could also have significant impacts on rural economies. He says if the price of ethanol doesn't improve quickly, there will be more and more slowdowns at ethanol plants and even some shutdowns. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's got today's agricultural weather forecast. Eric, thanks for being with us. What's your assessment?
Well, Todd, I think we hit the nail on the head with our forecast last week. Remember, we talked about that system coming through, possibly bringing that kind of slushy stuff in here. And we knew that that snow we had on the ground was going to melt and then freeze pretty hard as that cold air came in. And we certainly saw, you know, that snow we had left over from last week just freeze into solid ice. And that's kind of the name of the game moving forward. So listen to this. This is the setup right now. The polar vortex has been disrupted. It is split and a piece of it is sitting over the Hudson Bay. Now, that particular feature has a connection with the stratosphere where it sits all the way down to the troposphere. Now, it took about 2 weeks to develop, but now that cold air is firmly in place, we have a deep trough that is basically going to set up shop right over the Great Lakes. And under that trough, we will be seeing multiple systems swinging out of central Canada into the northern plains, across Illinois, and off to the northeast. That's our Alberta Clipper storm track. Now, that particular storm track is a relatively dry one. So even though I'm going to tell you that we've got chances of snow coming up multiple days in a row over the next 7 days, we're not expecting enormous amounts of snowfall out of this. And that's simply because each one of these systems that comes through is coming through on very, very cold air. And the colder the air becomes, the lower the amount of water vapor that it can contain. Okay, so we got all these chances for snow, but it's going to be that light, fine, powdery snow that kind of comes in. And we do have chances today, still throughout the weekend. Then Monday will probably be our chance for the most kind of well-organized of these Alberta Clippers coming through, but I think the real story is not so much in the snow, but with the wind we are going to get with some of these systems and the bitterly cold temperatures. Now, in Champaign-Urbana, our all-time record low is minus 25 degrees Fahrenheit. We set that 4 times in history. And I'm thinking that maybe over the next week, we may possibly have a couple of days in there, especially around the 31st, but we several other days in addition to that, but we may get close to those kind of record low temperatures. Now, I'm not calling for a new record to be set, but I'm just kind of trying to convey how cold it is going to get. Certainly, our wind chill factors are going to be brutally cold. And where this has me concerned is more with herd health, you know, livestock across all of the Midwest and the Great Plains. Because this is, you know, we're kind of at the start of calving season right now. And just imagine that your first few moments of life, if you are a baby calf, you know, coming into the world, we're at wind chills of maybe minus 40. So this is kind of crazy. And just so you know, when wind chill temperatures get below minus 18, exposed skin can freeze in about 30 minutes. When the wind chills are at minus 40, that time goes down to about 10 minutes. So frostbite is going to be a major concern here. So that's the name of the game. I do see the pattern moderating by the time we get into the beginning of February. In other words, I don't see it continuing just to have record cold being set throughout the month of February. But our best indications right now is that February will probably feature more often than not more troughing across the eastern two-thirds of the country than ridging, which means that we're kind of seeing an early season picture here for February showing up on the on the cooler side. Now, just so we remember, even though I said these, it's a drier time period for us, even though we're getting some light snow, we still have no drought across the Corn Belt, and that's an important factor as we move into our spring. Now, I think the more important story for at least ag markets is going to be what's going on in South America. You know, the Madden-Julian Oscillation, which helps control the strength of the Brazilian monsoon, has been out of phase with getting us a lot of rain in Brazil. And they've started harvest, and we're hearing some early numbers that most would just kind of call disappointing, down in Brazil at least. And so it's one of these things where I'm seeing that drier pattern continue probably through the next 15 days or so for much of Brazil's growing regions as they're trying to harvest their first crop bean and put that second crop, Safrinha crop of corn and cotton in. But the thing is the question is, are we seeing any sort of, a reprieve, getting more rain back in? And I'll say the longer term model runs are still dry, but not nearly as dry as they were. So I think we're going to get some, maybe some more favorable rainfall coming in as we progress into the month of February down in South America. But in the meantime, the drier conditions should be causing some problems with the yields down there. I think Argentina's wetter conditions, though, are making up for Brazil's drier conditions, just like last year where Brazil was making up for Argentina's drought. So that's the way it is, and we're watching it all for us, and we'll talk about it every week.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric. Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible. I'm Todd Gleason.